We just watched the market shed, what, about 9% of its value? It
Yeah.
felt like it happened in a matter of
Oh,
weeks.
yeah. The panic was real.
Yeah.
Everyone was talking about the next great
And
correction.
then just as violently, it snapped right back. It
Yeah.
was a dizzying contradiction to
It
watch.
was more than just whiplash, you
Yeah.
know? It felt like a fundamental stress test. We saw a deep, a really severe correction.
Right.
Maybe even some of those, you know, lingering AI bubble fears finally shook some capital out. And yet, right in the middle of all that chaos, this rare, historic technical signal just flash bright green.
Suggesting massive underlying strength.
Exactly.
That contradiction is just fascinating to me. What forces are really fighting beneath the surface of this recovery? Is this rebound driven by fundamentals? Is it policy? Or is it just like a technical blip that sucked in a bunch of momentum traders?
That is the core question. I mean, it's what every serious investor and market observer is asking right now, because the difference between a real cyclical upturn and just a temporary relief rally is, well, it's everything.
Yeah. Welcome back to the deep dive. Our mission today, for you, the listener, is a thorough examination of that exact market whiplash. We are going to go beyond the headlines to understand what the signals from the Federal Reserve, the dynamics of the global dollar, and those subtle shifts in the business cycle are actually telling us.
Yeah, and we've pulled together a serious stack of sources, articles, research notes, some internal analyses, and they paint a surprisingly nuanced, yet I think ultimately optimistic picture of where we are in this cycle.
Okay, so we're going to cover four core areas today, and we need to go deep on all of them. First, we'll analyze that brutal pullback versus the sudden historic snapback.
And we have to talk about that incredible signal, the Zweig breadth thrust.
Definitely. Then we move to the absolute center of gravity for everything, the Federal Reserve. We'll get into the central role of rate cut expectations.
And why they've become, you know, the single point of failure or success for all risk assets today. It's kind of scary how dependent it is. It really is. Third, we have to talk about the tightening vise of the US dollar and how global liquidity is getting squeezed.
And why that keeps the market feeling so heavy, even on the green days.
Right. And finally, we'll explore the conflicting signs that suggest the business cycle, the real economy, might be quietly but powerfully turning up.
Driven by some surprising indicators, like industrial metals. Okay, let's unpack this.
All right, let's start where the pain was most visible, that recent correction. On the surface, if you were just looking at the major indices, you know, the S&P 500 shedding around 6%, it didn't seem catastrophic.
No, it didn't. But this was a classic case of the index just masking some much deeper trouble underneath. If you were simply tracking the S&P's price, you really missed the true depth of that correction. When analysts talk about a soft correction where maybe just a few sectors pull back, this was definitely not that.
So what was happening under the hood?
Well, at one point during the deepest part of that trough, 35% of the entire S&P 500.
A third of the index, over a third of these mega cap American companies, had individually slipped into what analysts call their own personal bear markets.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they were individually down more than 20% from their recent highs. So this wasn't just, you know, some light profit taking. This was a massive systemic rotation out of perceived speculation and froth. Capital was aggressively fleeing high-risk names.
And that aggressive flight just hammered the highest beta risk assets first. Crypto, of course, took the brunt of that liquidity shock.
You saw it immediately. Bitcoin, for instance, got hit with a brutal 36% drawdown.
Ooh.
And what's crucial here is that the market still hasn't shaken this correlation.
Yeah.
It treats Bitcoin, BTC, exactly like a high beta US tech stock.
Right, the speculative ones.
The really speculative ones with high fixed costs and big growth expectations. So when those equities dump on risk-off sentiment, crypto gets punished like twice as hard because it's seen as the ultimate barometer of speculative liquidity.
That tight correlation is still a key vulnerability then.
It absolutely is.
And at the same time, the nature of the fear itself seemed to shift. It wasn't just about inflation anymore. We started hearing these serious, structured discussions about an AI bubble.
It's become a core institutional theme now. We've seen data suggesting that nearly half of global fund managers,
Nearly half.
yeah, nearly half now, list the risk of an AI bubble bursting as the single biggest tail risk in the entire macro environment.
That's a huge shift in sentiment.
It is. It's moved from, you know, fringe commentary by the usual bears to a central formalized theme in every serious market overview and risk management document. That concentration of worry is a serious indicator that sentiment might be topping out, or at least getting extremely cautious.
And we saw some subtle but pretty powerful warning signs in the tech credit markets that seemed to validate this concern. It wasn't just stock prices.
No, it was the debt attached to these companies. That's where the real nuance is.
So what did you see?
We saw credit default swaps, which, for you listening, are basically just insurance policies against the risk that a borrower might default on their debt on some big-name AI players starting to drift higher.
So while stock investors were still bidding up the future, the people whose job it is to actually calculate bankruptcy risk were subtly raising the premium on that insurance.
Precisely. It suggests that while the equity investors are still optimistic about growth, the people who insure the debt are starting to price in a slightly higher, more complex risk profile. They're preparing for the possibility that all this high cash burn and immense capital expenditure might not pay off as quickly as the stock market thinks.
That is the kind of detail that gets completely lost in the excitement of a bull run. But despite these financial warnings, the U.S. government took a major policy step that sort of reframed the whole issue.
That's the critical policy anchor. It's called the Genesis Mission. The U.S. government officially rolled out this national AI doctrine.
And what does that mean practically?
It means they formally framed AI as a national security asset, not just a commercial technology. The clear signal is that the government fully intends to backstop, support, and resource this sector.
So, on one hand, you have fund managers fearing a commercial bubble, a classic overvaluation.
Right.
And on the other, you have the world's primary power basically saying, this technology is a strategic national security priority. It's like our space program.
Exactly. And that reframes the entire risk-reward equation. It makes the long-term outlook fundamentally bullish for AI infrastructure, no matter what happens with short-term commercial volatility. Because the buyer of last resort, the U.S. government, is signaling its commitment.
It also raises the stakes, though.
Oh, massively. It signals that the stakes and the risks associated with not leading in this domain are rising significantly for everyone involved.
Okay, so that was the severe washout. It was driven by fear, high valuations, but then came the snapback. And it was incredibly fast, a classic V-shape, and more importantly, it was broad.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a few big tech names carrying the index. It was about massive underlying market participation.
Which is a very healthy sign.
It's a very healthy rebound.
Yeah.
And we saw this behavior mirrored in international markets as well, which really highlights the global sensitivity to U.S. policy signals.
How so?
Well, international equity markets have been really jittery.
Mm.
We saw a sharp sell-off across European and Asian indices when President Trump, for example, threatened higher import tariffs.
Because that gums up global trade.
Right. And then an equally sharp reversal when he announced a 90-day cooling off period on that tariff talk. That pivot nearly erased all the earlier losses in a single day.
Wow.
It just shows how quickly global sentiment can pivot based on just the talk of policy changes out of Washington.
But the real reason for the optimism, the thing that grabbed every technical analyst's attention, was the appearance of a truly rare signal. This is where historical data meets the present. The Zweig breadth thrust.
This signal is so unique because it suggests a powerful, almost instantaneous shift from deeply bearish, you know, capitulation-type sentiment to overwhelmingly bullish participation. It goes beyond just priced to measure the sheer strength and breadth of the market.
Can you define the mechanics simply? Because the numbers are really precise on this one.
They are. It happens when the 10-day average of advancing U.S. stocks, so the ratio of stocks going up versus down jumps from a really depressed level, specifically below 40%, to a significantly expanded level above 61.5%.
And all within 10 days?
All within the compressed time frame of just 10 trading days. It's a rapid, comprehensive shift in market enthusiasm. It shows that bearish capital is just flooding back in all at once.
Whoa. I mean, imagine the power of a technical signal that has predicted double-digit gains 100% of the time.
It's unbelievable.
This pattern, it's only appeared 16 times since the 1950s. And every single time, it has delivered double-digit gains for the S&P 500 in the following 6 to 12 months. That's a powerful, clean history that you just can't ignore no matter what your macro fears are.
It really grounds the current snapback in historical context. It strongly suggests that the worst of the volatility is likely behind us, and that sustained follow-through is highly probable.
But history offers strength, not guarantees. So what are the points of caution we still need to watch?
Well, the main one is in the global index structure. We have to watch the critical support level for the MSCI World Index, which is at 32.40.
Okay.
if the global index holds above that line, then the broader structural uptrend remains intact. A decisive break below that would, you know, invalidate some of the strengths suggested by the Zweig thrust.
And then domestically, we have the Russell 2000, the small cap index, and it's threatening multi-year highs, which counterintuitively is often a sign of economic strength, not weakness.
Yeah, it is classic textbook early cycle behavior. Small caps are typically the last to turn in a recession and the first to signal a robust recovery.
Because they're more sensitive to the local economy.
Exactly. More domestically focused, more sensitive to the cost of capital. When small caps start moving like that, it suggests the economic strength is broadening well beyond just a handful of mega cap tech players. It's a sign of underlying grassroots robustness.
Okay, now for a significant divergence, and this is where we need to flag a potential warning sign specifically for the decentralized asset space, Ethereum, ETH, is lagging behind this powerful Russell breakout.
It's an unusual tell. It really is. Historically, whenever the Russell 2000 rips, when small caps break out, signaling cheap capital is flowing into riskier domestic ventures,
crypto usually follows.
Crypto, and especially the altcoin complex led by ETH, follows with a massive frenzy phase. The Russell breakout is a sign of broad risk appetite returning. If ETH continues to lag while small caps are showing this strength, that becomes a red flag for crypto joining the next phase of the risk rally.
So why might that divergence be happening now? Is it just technical, or is there maybe an institutional or regulatory element at play?
I think it's a mix. One, you know, institutional focus has heavily consolidated around Bitcoin because of the spot ETFs and its perceived status as digital gold.
Right.
And two, there are these lingering regulatory uncertainties, specifically around Ethereum's classification, that might be suppressing institutional capital that would otherwise drive that frenzy.
I see. So if the Russell is signaling risk on, but ETH isn't responding, we have to look beyond just the technicals.
Yeah, you have to consider the regulatory or structural headwinds specific to that network. Given the strong fear of an AI bubble that nearly half of global fund managers cite and the underlying regulatory pressure, what weight should we actually put on a rare historical signal like the Zweig breadth thrust?
Technical strength suggests follow-through is almost guaranteed, validating the immediate snapback, even while those longer-term sentiment fears about an AI bubble still persist. If the first segment was about the market's raw emotion fear turning to greed, then this segment is about its central nervous system.
That's a good way to put it.
Because to understand the macro environment right now, you just cannot ignore the Federal Reserve. The entire market is trading almost perfectly on rate cut expectations.
It's not just a correlation, it's a gravitational anchor. It's a nearly perfect one-to-one relationship. When the odds of a December rate cut drop, even by a little, risk assets sink instantly.
Because the market has to reprice higher debt costs.
Instantly. And when those odds rise, markets jump. The Fed's potential move is the absolute gravity well for global asset prices today.
And the interesting, maybe even dangerous part is that the data we're seeing right now largely supports what everyone has been hoping for, the dream scenario.
Exactly. The data currently suggests the economy is proving incredibly resilient and strong. We're avoiding a recession, while inflation simultaneously keeps gliding down on its own. We're achieving the soft landing.
It's the monetary policy equivalent of having your cake and eating it, too.
It really is.
So why is that the dream scenario, specifically for risk assets and the highly leveraged parts of the economy, like small caps?
Because it means the Fed has the perfect political and economic rationale to ease policy, to cut rates, without triggering a new inflation spike.
Which would ruin their credibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look at the forward inflation expectations in the Treasury market. They've collapsed. This is key. The market is signaling that it believes inflation is now fully under control.
So that gives the Fed cover.
It gives them the essential cover they need to cut rates without fear. Without that public belief and cover, they risk losing control of the whole narrative.
And that cover is just pure oxygen for high beta assets, small caps, credit-sensitive companies, crypto, all the things that thrive when money is cheap.
It is the ultimate lubrication for the system. But the stability of this whole scenario is entirely dependent on timing. We are in a critical window.
Right.
The market has priced in a certain sequence of cuts. If the Fed drags its feet, if they hesitate or signal they need more time, markets will wobble and pull back violently because that cut is already priced in.
The market hates uncertainty, even more than it hates high rates.
Precisely. If the Fed validates the expected path, if they confirm this dream scenario by executing the cut, every risk asset gets the oxygen it needs for a sustained rally. If they delay, they crush those expectations and likely trigger another sharp correction.
We also have to consider the risk that the economy is, well, too strong. If the labor market stays white hot and growth keeps surprising, doesn't the Fed risk cutting rates into that strength and just reigniting a wage price spiral?
That is the principal counter risk to the dream scenario.
Yeah.
It's what keeps policymakers awake at night.
I bet.
If the Fed cuts based on current inflation, but economic activity accelerates because of those lower rates, you get a quick, unexpected reacceleration of inflation.
And that would force them to slam the brakes on again.
And potentially guarantee the hard landing they're trying so hard to avoid.
So the market is currently running on this perfect balance beam. An economy strong enough to avoid recession, but inflation weak enough to justify easing. That's a tightrope.
It is the tightest of tightropes. Every single piece of economic data, every jobs report, every CPI reading is now filtered through this one question. Does this give the Fed more cover to cut, or does it restrict them?
And the answer dictates the market's movement for the next 24 hours.
Exactly. The precise timing of any action remains absolutely critical.
How robust is the market's reliance on this current dream scenario of falling inflation and economic resilience, especially given the risks you just outlined?
Current data provides strong justification for the Fed to eventually move, but the risk of cutting too early into persistent strength remains, demanding precise, data-dependent timing to maintain market stability.
Okay, let's pivot to the persistent low-grade problem that's keeping the overall market feeling heavy. Even on days when stocks are up, there's this gravitational pull.
Right.
And the explanation lies squarely with the U.S. dollar index, the DXY, and the overall state of global liquidity.
The DXY, which measures the dollar against a basket of major currencies, has been grinding higher for months.
Yeah.
And this is the universal mechanical truth of global finance. Whenever the DXY strengthens, global liquidity tightens.
It's just a simple mechanical reaction, but the impact is profound.
It's huge. And as we established, you feel that dollar squeeze first in the highest beta assets, like crypto.
Yeah, crypto is the canary in the global coal mine for liquidity.
It's arguably the single most liquidity-sensitive asset class on the planet. Any dollar squeeze, any reduction in the easy availability of USD hits it first and hardest.
And it's easy to think of a strong dollar as just a problem for emerging markets, but its power is much bigger than that, isn't it?
Much bigger. The dollar is the world's reserve and trading currency. When it strengthens, it acts like a slow-moving wrecking ball for everything that trades on risk appetite because it raises the cost of capital everywhere else.
How does that work?
Well, trillions of dollars of global debt, especially corporate debt, is denominated in USD. When the dollar gets more expensive, the cost of servicing and repaying that debt skyrockets for any non-US company.
And that immediately siphons capital away that would otherwise go into investments or hiring.
Exactly. It makes liquidity, the availability of dollars, scarce everywhere else in the world. Risk assets just don't sustain big, powerful rallies when the DXY is consistently rising.
It's important to keep the dollar strength in context, though. We're talking about a heavy feeling, not a panic yet.
No, absolutely not. Context is everything here. Currently, DXY is still below 100 points. That is significantly below the late 2022 high of 114, which you'll remember was the level that caused severe strain and forced Bitcoin and crypto prices to fall off a cliff.
So we're not at a crisis level of dollar strength yet.
Not yet. But the liquidity squeeze isn't just about the DXY's price. It's about the actual volume of money in the system. And that leads us to M2.
Right, the money supply.
Global M2 growth, which is a broad measure money supply, has slowed sharply from the pandemic levels. This is restricting that steady tide of money that normally lifts all risk markets at the same time.
So if you imagine the market as a rising ocean, the tide isn't coming in anymore. It's sort of retreated.
That's a perfect analogy. Even if U.S. equities look resilient, the overall global liquidity backdrop is still restrictive, not accommodative.
You know, I still wrestle with understanding the true lag effect of Fed actions like quantitative tightening or QT. It just feels like this giant hidden vacuum cleaner in the background that keeps sucking up liquidity.
That is a perfect description of it. And QT has been exactly that since 2022, a major liquidity drain. Yeah. But the U.S. added a new twist recently by officially halting quantitative tightening on December 1st.
That's a huge shift, even if it sounds subtle. Why did they stop it?
It's a sign of vulnerability in the banking system. QT had been pushing bank reserves, the liquid cash held by commercial banks at the Fed, too low. The system was starting to creak.
So they had to relieve the pressure.
Yes. Shutting off QT removes a significant mechanical headwind against liquidity. It's the Fed quietly admitting that the system needs relief and a stable level of reserves to function smoothly.
Okay, so halting QT stops the drain. But what about the refill? Where does the real positive liquidity shift come from that can truly weaken the dollar?
That's predicted for next year. And the real shift is expected to start with something called reserve management purchases, or RMPs, which are forecast to begin in January 2026.
So this isn't a new QE stimulus program.
Not at all.
Yeah.
This is the Fed quietly adjusting the technical levers. It means they're adding liquidity back into the system, but not as a flood, more like a slow drip.
A necessary, consistent slow drip.
Precisely. And even a slow drip of new liquidity when the drain has been stopped is fundamentally dollar bearish over the long term. And a weaker dollar is exactly what every risk asset needs to break out of this current choppy, restrictive regime.
So to summarize the liquidity picture, we're stuck today in a dollar up, liquidity down environment.
But the policy outlook for 2026 is already setting up to be the opposite. A dollar bearish, liquidity up environment. Markets need the DXY to fully stop rising before they can truly breathe and sustain that powerful rally this wide signal is pointing to. Since the DXY is still below 100, which is historically moderate, what is the single most important sign that global liquidity is easing sustainably beyond just the promise of 2026 policy?
The end of the mechanical liquidity drain via the QT halt, combined with the forecasted 2026 reserve management purchases, is the key structural shift that removes the dollar-up headwind.
All right, let's turn our attention from financial policy and liquidity to the underlying real economy. Because here we have a fascinating split. It's one of the weirdest contradictions in the macro environment today.
Now, how the business cycle looks depends entirely on which PMI you happen to look at.
Right, the Purchasing Managers Index.
We have this clear confounding divergence in how the American manufacturing sector is reporting its health. The widely followed ISM manufacturing PMI is still stuck below 50.
Which signals contraction? A recessionary signal. Exactly. But the S&P Global PMI is already above 50, which signals expansion. They can't both be right.
So why do these two leading indices differ so drastically? Which one should we trust?
Well, it comes down to methodology and weighting. The ISM index is weighted more heavily toward older, large, heavy industrial firms.
Like core manufacturing.
Right. The S&P Global PMI, on the other hand, includes a broader range of companies, including smaller, faster-growing firms. And it puts more weight on things like new orders and forward-looking sentiment.
So the S&P Global number might be a better barometer of where the economy is going rather than where it was 6 months ago.
That's the interpretation favored by the optimists. And when you zoom out and look at the broader landscape of leading indicators, they tend to heavily support that expansion story.
What are those classic indicators that are confirming the expansion?
You see it in the regional Fed manufacturing indexes like the Dallas and Philly Fed surveys. They're lifting sharply from their lows. Industrial production is firming up.
Mm-hmm.
And critically, durable goods orders are turning higher. That signals companies are committing capital to long-term equipment purchases. These are the classic, undeniable signs of an early cycle expansion, even if the headline ISM number hasn't caught up yet.
And the global policy backdrop supports this optimism, too.
It does. Look around the globe. Nearly every major central bank is either on hold or actively cutting rates. The global policy impulse is no longer restrictive.
And that matters because historically, when the world stops tightening, the global business cycle usually turns decisively higher a few months later.
That monetary lag is exactly what we're seeing play out now.
Okay, to really test if this growth is real, we need to look at commodities. They are the ultimate barometer of real economic growth. You can't fake demand for physical goods.
And specifically, we need to look at crude oil and copper.
Right.
Crude oil has been the quiet confirmation. For a market that's usually so aggressive, its subdued behavior is really telling. It suggests global demand isn't collapsing, which is good news.
But it's not accelerating yet either. It's just sitting flat.
Exactly. It's in classic wait-and-see mode. Investors are waiting for clearer, harder confirmation of real economic momentum before they bid it higher. A sustained breakout in crude would be the ultimate confirmation that the business cycle is truly heating up.
But copper is telling a completely different and very encouraging story.
Copper is truly waking up. We're seeing early, persistent signs of accumulation and higher prices. And that matters profoundly because copper earned the nickname Dr. Copper for a reason.
You have a PhD in economics.
Right. It almost always moves ahead of broader industrial activity. It doesn't follow the cycle. It leads it.
And why is it such a good predictor?
Because it sits at the absolute center of construction, electrification, renewable energy infrastructure, and every major industrial supply chain. And critically, that includes data center wiring and cooling.
Which brings us back to AI.
It does. A sustained move higher in copper would absolutely validate that S&P global PMI upturn as real and driven by hard demand, not just a data quirk.
And investors aren't just watching this, they are actively placing bets on it. We're seeing a steady, significant rise in commodity ETF inflows.
This is a crucial behavioral signal. Investors are quietly but strategically rotating capital back into hard assets. The last two times these strategic inflows picked up, we saw a major sustained rally in commodity prices.
So this behavior reflects an expectation that inflation has bottomed and real economic demand is about to strengthen.
Dramatically. It makes industrial inputs a fantastic inflation hedge and a growth play. So if these inflows continue, and if we see sustained strength in copper, the macro environment is essentially set for a broad commodity upcycle.
If commodities are stirring now, particularly copper, does this suggest that global growth is strong enough to potentially force the Fed's hand on rates sooner than expected, possibly invalidating that dream scenario?
Rising commodity inflows strongly suggest demand strength is building faster than anticipated, supporting the overall early cycle expansion outlook and raising the risk that the Fed might lag behind real economic activity. So, to synthesize everything we've covered in this deep dive, the recent market volatility was a necessary healthy washout. It was a proper cleansing of speculative excess.
And that rapid rebound, which was confirmed by that powerful and rare Zweig breadth thrust signal, suggests the path of least resistance is now structurally higher for the broad market.
Right. But while liquidity remains a major near-term constraint, the DXY is still up and keeping things heavy. The key policy decisions are setting the stage for a weaker dollar ahead.
Like the QT halt and the forecast for 2026 reserve purchases.
Exactly. And you couple that with the undeniable signs of commodity stirring, especially the leadership from Dr. Copper. And it really feels like we are moving toward a stronger, confirmed early cycle expansion.
Even if the ride stays choppy for a few more months until that dollar finally stabilizes.
The market is in this really interesting transitional phase. It's balancing powerful, historical bullish signals against a tight, restrictive liquidity environment. The coming months will be about which of those two forces wins out.
Okay, here's a final provocative thought for you to chew on. Consider the intersection of the U.S. national security doctrine for AI, the Genesis mission, and those rising copper prices. If the U.S. government views AI infrastructure as a national security imperative, that implies unlimited capital commitment. Is the massive subsidized race for AI infrastructure building out the colossal data centers, the wiring, the cooling systems, is that the new fundamental demand driver that will validate the business cycle upturn and fuel the commodity rally?
So the demand for copper might not be coming from traditional home building or car manufacturing.
It might be coming from the future of national defense and technological dominance.
An interesting thought. We'll leave you with that convergence point to explore.
Until the next deep dive, stay curious and keep tracking the signals.